This is the story of a horrible dilemma dropped in the lap of medical professionals in South Africa. How to decide which patients to save when the government puts limits on life-sustaining kidney dialysis. How to choose who lives and who dies. The question arises for nearly 200 patients a year at Tygerberg Academic Hospital near Cape Town. Two patients arrived recently. Amos Phillips came by ambulance, confused and struggling to breathe. He had severe kidney failure.
I cannot move.
He says he couldn't move. He felt so miserable, he told the doctor.
Kill me.
Karen McPherson wanted to live. She was a widow in her 40s, raising three children.
I had high blood pressure all my life with my baby's birth. They say it's because of the high blood. The kidneys don't want to work anymore.
Kidney failure can come on suddenly and affect anyone. Some forms are partial or reversible. Others are permanent and fatal without treatment. Both Amos Phillips and Karen McPherson would need ongoing dialysis treatment to filter toxins from their blood. But needing treatment didn't mean they would get it. Dr. Rafiq Musa is a kidney specialist at Tygerberg Hospital.
Kidney disease is an extremely expensive disease to treat. It costs us in the region of about $10,000 per year to treat a single patient. Now, for our economy, that is really a very substantial amount when you realize that there are other health challenges and priorities that we as a society face.
To save money, public hospitals in South Africa strictly limit the number of dialysis treatment slots. At Tygerberg, only about 1 in 5 patients is accepted for treatment, and it falls to the medical staff to ration. So the fate of Amos Phillips and Karen McPherson would be decided by a committee. The committee meets on Tuesday mornings. On this morning, around a dozen medical professionals with stethoscopes around their necks gather in a small conference room on the 10th floor of Tygerberg Hospital. They're here to consider 5 new patients for the program. So how will the doctors choose who lives? This is an especially important question, given South Africa's history. Tygerberg is a vast public hospital built during the apartheid era, when the government mandated racial segregation. Hallways stretch out east and west in wings that are mirror images.
This used to be the white side. That used to be the black side.
Dr. Musa says that for decades, committees have decided who gets dialysis treatment. Looking at historical data, he found that patient selection often fell along racial lines.
Black patients were disadvantaged.
The apartheid era ended with the first multiracial democratic elections of 1994. But between 1988 and 2003, white patients were nearly 4 times more likely to be accepted for dialysis treatment than non-whites. And there was no way for patients or the public to know why or how the committee was making its decisions. Recently, the government announced cutbacks that would squeeze the dialysis program even further, while at the same time, the number of new kidney patients was skyrocketing. Dr. Musa and his colleagues protested the budget cuts and decided to establish a new, more explicit rationing system. Ethicists, government officials, and several patients participated in the effort to take public responsibility for rationing.
The main thrust of this was to be fair and equitable and transparent.
The state government adopted the new system earlier this year. It categorizes patients based on a variety of medical and social factors. And that's the system that would be used to evaluate the 2 recent patients at Tygerberg, Amos Phillips and Karen McPherson. At the committee meeting, the hospital's longtime social worker for kidney patients, Mariki Schwart, presides.
Okay, Mr. Amos Phillips.
She projects a photo of Phillips onto a large screen. He's lying in a hospital bed. He has closely cropped brown hair. Phillips's doctor outlines his medical condition.
His left kidney was...
And then social worker Schwart continues the discussion.
Okay, he's from the Doorns, 41 years of age, and he speaks Afrikaans and Xhosa as well. He could read and write.
Committee members listen for factors they're supposed to consider when deciding whether to accept Phillips for the dialysis program.
Never smoked, never used any drugs. He only drank over weekends with his wife, but they would only buy about 4 beers between the 2 of them. Not a party animal.
That's a point in his favor. Under the guidelines, active substance abuse automatically excludes a patient from receiving dialysis. Schwart reviews Phillips's housing.
It's a one-bedroomed house with a lounge kitchen and a bathroom. They do have a bath, basin, and toilet inside.
The guidelines call these good home circumstances, and they too improve Phillips's chances of being chosen for dialysis. Doctors say having running water, sanitation, and electricity is helpful for a certain type of dialysis performed at home, though these criteria disadvantage the poorest South Africans, who often lack utilities at home. Schwart offers more personal details.
He is employed on a farm, and his income is more or less 1,200 to 1,500 rand a month. No criminal record. He's married. His wife is 33 years old, and they've got three children of 39 and 4 years old, all three living with them.
These factors, criminal and employment history, whether the patient is a parent, have little to do with the chances of benefiting medically from dialysis. They are, instead, a measure of social worth. Dr. Musa says the committee used to weigh these factors heavily when considering patients for dialysis.
Essentially, the question that we used to ask ourselves, you know, if we put this patient onto a program, of what benefit can he be to the society?
Today, those factors are supposed to be given less weight. The ethicists, who helped draw up the guidelines, argued that medical practitioners should not judge which patients are the worthiest contributors to society. Judgments are often wrong. For example, former prisoners might have been falsely convicted, especially during the apartheid years. Patients who lack their own children might be helping to raise others. Most important, the ethicists said, are medical criteria. Is the patient healthy enough to undergo a kidney transplant? If so, he or she might someday no longer need dialysis, and that would free up a slot for a new patient. The problem is, few actually are able to get transplants, and there are far more good medical candidates than there are dialysis slots. So the committee falls back on subjective criteria. Does the patient seem motivated? Does he or she have a good social support network? The assessment committee weighs the factors in Amos Phillips's case. Should he be ranked Category 1, the only category of patients guaranteed dialysis?
I think he would almost be a Category 1 patient if it wasn't for his late presentation.
Phillips presented late. That is, he arrived at the hospital after his kidneys had already failed. That bumps him to Category 2, not guaranteed dialysis.
Okay. All right, next patient.
On this day, the committee also talks about Karen McPherson, the widowed mother of three. Her picture is projected on the screen. Her wide eyes peer through large plastic glasses. Dr. Yazid Chauthia describes her medical and social situation.
She is the only breadwinner. She's got children and she takes care of them. Yesterday they brought her in here because she was nauseous, vomiting, and it sounds like the family's struggling in terms of taking care of us.
Her case has come before the committee before. She has many characteristics that count in her favor. She's well below the age of 60, the cutoff for initiating dialysis under the guidelines. She doesn't have any other serious medical or psychiatric disorder which could disqualify her. And she has a home near the hospital with running water and electricity. Before the new guidelines were adopted, the selection committee might have given great consideration to the fact that she's a mother with a steady job and no criminal history. But the committee has recently turned her down. Dr. Musa, who's been on vacation, wants to know why.
We didn't accept her for the program.
It was mainly based on her BMI, Prof.
BMI.
Her BMI was 39, yeah.
BMI is body mass index. McPherson's is high. She's obese. And although obese patients do better on average on dialysis, they have a poorer prognosis when it comes to kidney transplant. And that, according to the new rationing guidelines, takes precedence. Dr. Musa accepts the committee's previous decision. She's Category 3, automatically excluded from dialysis treatment, and she's already very sick.
It probably won't be for very much longer. Okay.
The next day, Karen McPherson lies beneath a pink blanket at a small hospice on the grounds of an evangelical church. She's so weak she trembles when she sits up, and she's too nauseous to keep down her food. Her father comes to visit, and she asks him about her prognosis.
Did the doctor say how long I've got to live?
No, yeah, things like how long you live. You're going to live long enough. Don't you worry about that. You just get well, that's all. There's no limitation. And whatever a doctor says, it's not final. God got the final say. Yeah.
Encouraged by her father and by the nurse's prayers, Karen McPherson tries to stay hopeful.
I want to get better. I want to get out of here. Get my life back on track. Get back to my kids.
Get back to your children.
Get back to my children. My daughter needs me.
The more we talk, the clearer it becomes that there's much she doesn't know. She seems unaware that she was turned down for dialysis, or even that dialysis could help her. Her doctor confirms he didn't tell her about the program, although he says he did inform Karen's father. According to the prioritization guidelines, patients are supposed to be fully informed of the committee's decision and the reasons for denial, and given the opportunity to appeal. But Dr. Rafiq Musa says despite the need for transparency in the new rationing system, being completely open is sometimes just too hard.
The reality is that it's very difficult to go to a patient and inform them, well, look, there is this particular form of therapy which is available to you, which will help you live another reasonably healthy life for another 5 to 10 years. And then in the same breath say, well, unfortunately, I can't offer to you. I think it's actually cruel, I think, to dangle that almost as a carrot in front of a patient.
Perhaps even crueler is the fact that dialysis is rationed only in the public system, where about 8 out of 10 South Africans get their care. Patients who have medical insurance or who are wealthy enough to pay for treatment out of pocket can get dialysis at private clinics, regardless of their age, medical, or social situation. That inequity is mirrored in the larger world. In many countries, few people with kidney disease have access to dialysis. But in the United States, virtually all do. Back in the 1960s, U.S. health professionals quietly rationed dialysis, much like South Africans do today. But Americans were so outraged when they learned about rationing based on perceived social worth that Congress eventually passed legislation that now provides dialysis through Medicare for patients of any age. It's a massive program that costs U.S. taxpayers around $20 billion a year. South African physicians are looking to expand public dialysis programs by partnering with private clinics, campaigning for more funding, and trying to cut costs. But any such plans will come too late for today's kidney patients. Tygerberg Hospital has no free slots for dialysis. But sometimes, even strict rationing has its wiggle room.
So, Mr. Phillips, we discussed you yesterday in our meeting.
Okay. The day after the committee meeting, Dr. Andre Nokia met with kidney patient Amos Phillips. The committee had classified him as a Category 2 patient. Currently, only Category 1 patients are supposed to be accepted for dialysis and the chance of an eventual transplant. But Phillips was borderline. The committee members hate turning anyone away. They accepted him for dialysis.
We will support you in terms of that.
Yes.
What I mean by that is that we will offer you in future a kidney transplant.
Yes, yes, yes. I understand, okay.
You understand?
I understand, and it's very happy.
Okay, that's very good.
Yes.
Amos
okay.
Phillips was put on dialysis and soon returned home to his family. Meanwhile, Karen McPherson only grew weaker, more nauseous, and confused. 2 weeks later, she was buried on what would have been her 44th birthday. For The World, I'm Sherry Fink, Cape Town, South Africa.